Cast on community radio across the United States, including our host station, KPFT Pacifica, Houston, Texas. This program is produced and engineered by Jazz Williams, co-produced by Scott Powell, and our publicity and outreach are coordinated by Amanda Bellerby. To listen to previous shows or to make a donation, go to our website, ifyoulovethisplanet.org.
You are listening to PRN.FM, the Progressive Radio Network.
Much for joining us. This is Ellen Kamai, the natural nurse, and as always, I'm wishing you the best. And one of the things we love about being part of Gary Null's network is the fact that you can listen in any time of day or night by just going to Progressive Radio Network. You can find us by Googling Progressive Radio Network or just go to PRN.FM. And you'll come to a very easily navigated page where you can find archives. And if you're in the archives, look at Natural Nurse. That's now under N for Natural Nurse. And we have all the shows that we do right here at Progressive Radio Network. And in addition, there's all kinds of other very, very interesting and well-done shows, including Gary Null shows. So it's a wonderful resource for yourself and your family. Now, on today's show, we're going to talk a little bit about food, and then we're going to have our guest, Dr. David Gentile. And I often get asked for people, who could you recommend in terms of a doctor who understands integrative and holistic medicine? And Dr. Gentile is one of the doctors that I often recommend, especially for someone in the Long Island area. And we're going to bring him on board right after we have the first part of the show. Now, one of the things that you may want to use to educate yourself are things like YouTube and movies. And there's two excellent movies. One is called Food Incorporated, and the other one is called Fresh. I saw both of them. And then in the newsletter that I send out, which is free, by the way, you can just go to naturalnurse.com, go down to the bottom of the page on the left-hand side. There's a box. Just put your email address in, no other information, and you will get a free newsletter that I send out all the time, which has a lot of interesting information, such as how to use herbs to take care of yourself. You can find out more about that by going to books at naturalnurse.com, and you'll see that we've written many, many books, including The Natural Guide to Great Sex, Weight Loss, The Alternative Medicine Definitive Guide, Arthritis, The Alternative Medicine Definitive Guide, and The Natural Medicine Chest. One of the things that all of these books discuss, regardless of what your health issue is food. And I don't think people realize sometimes how important and how easy and inexpensive it is to feel so much better. Because the point is that the American food system is actually in crisis. And it's plagued with an industrial mentality that puts profits ahead of people. And I must say, unfortunately, it has gotten much worse over the last 4 years during the Obama administration because of the fact that he has put into the food system food czars, and they are people who come right from Monsanto. And Monsanto, the more you look into that organization, the worse you will see it is. And perhaps you would want to become a little bit more politically active, because right now there are groups that are attempting to put on the ballot in various states the right to have genetically modified food labeled so that you could make an intelligent choice. In the meantime, your only choice in order to avoid genetically modified food is to purchase food that you know from a farmer who is growing without GMOs, or in fact growing your own. Those are the only two ways to avoid it, because in every single kind of packaged food there is genetically modified. And what's wrong with that? Well, they're grown from organisms that have had their DNA altered in a way that has never occurred before in nature. And the biggest problems with this, according to the World Health Organization, are allergenicity, which means the transfer of genes from commonly allergenic foods could pose a problem for those who are already allergic. For instance, let's say you're allergic to salmon, and you start eating some wheat that has had a salmon gene input into it. Okay, and then you're going to think that you're allergic to wheat because you get sick, but actually it's a transfer of the salmon gene that is causing the problem. Another problem with genetic modification is outcrossing. Genes from genetically modified plants contaminate conventional crops in the wild through natural pollination and other processes such as wind. In addition, seeds from genetically modified and conventional crops can inadvertently be mixed. This outcrossing represents a threat to the future safety and security of the food supply and has occurred many times. Why do we want this genetically modified food? It is outrageous. And I will tell you that I first learned about genetically modified food in 1969. You got that right, 1969. And at the time, I was at Cornell University. I was a student studying there, and I was working in a laboratory where they were beginning to look into this genetic modification process. It was very different from the hybrids. You know, there's always been hybrids, and there's also been where they take a branch and put it within another tree so that a different species might be growing from the trunk of a tree. That has been going on a long time, but is not the same as transferring genes in genetic modification. How they try to promote this is because they say it's needed for feeding the world hungry, but what it has done, in effect, is create many more hungry in the world. In addition, the proponents of genetically modified food say that it would be good because it'll reduce the use of pesticides and herbicides, but the exact opposite has occurred. It has vastly increased the use of pesticides and herbicides. So this is something to be avoided at all costs. And how we can take a stand, you know, we can at least take a very small stand by choosing non-GMO foods for ourselves and our family. Now, another thing is obesity. Obesity, diabetes, heart disease, and other health problems are actually at epidemic levels, higher than ever before. And that is because the actual food production system encourages the production of highly processed foods, which are high in sugar, calories, and non-nutritional fillers, especially corn and soy. And guess what? Corn and soy are highly genetically modified. Another great movie about that is called King Corn. That's K-I-N-G-K-O-R-N, King Corn. And that will give you the whole story on how this GMO corn has infiltrated into pretty much every single processed food on the market. Another problem is factory farms. If you are going to eat meat, you want to avoid all meat that is produced on the factory farms. And of the 10 billion animals raised and killed for food in the United States every year, nearly all of them are raised on factory farms. Unless you can find a small organic farmer who raises his own foods and slaughters them in humane conditions. But the factory farms torture these animals, kill them in very inhumane ways, and also pollute the surrounding communities and contribute significantly to global warming by the vast lots where they keep these animals, which of course are always producing gas, you know, just through their normal ruminant activity. So that's another very bad problem. You know, when I was younger, I was a vegetarian for many years, especially when I was involved in studying Eastern spirituality. And then I started living with Native Americans out in the desert around Arizona. I had met Hopi people and other Navajo-type tribes people, and I wound up actually living for several years with indigenous cultures. And I found that they did eat meat, but they still were very spiritual. So that was interesting to me because I was doing vegetarianism more for spiritual growth rather than specifically for health in those years. And I found that the Native American culture seemed very, very spiritual, even though they were a meat-eating culture. So that was something of a light bulb going off in my mind. And what I did after that was I had my own farm in Arizona. It was actually in Bisbee, Arizona. And I raised my own animals and my own vegetables, all from scratch. And I found that raising animals from scratch and telling them when they were born that they were literally going to become part of myself and my family was actually a very spiritually uplifting experience. We didn't enjoy the day when we did have to slaughter them, but it was done humanely, and it was done in a way that was very spiritually connected to the way this has been done in an ancient way. And that kind of meat did not have any kind of pesticide residues. The animals themselves were not fed on corn. They were fed on grass, which we grew in our own fields. So it was a very, very different kind of experience. And you still can access that kind of meat if you can get in touch with local farmers in your area. So these are some things you may want to look into for yourself and your family. Another very upsetting thing is that cloning has been approved. The FDA has actually approved the sale of both meat and milk from cloned livestock, despite the fact that Congress voted twice to delay the decision until further safety and economic studies have been conducted. By the way, no safety and economic studies have been conducted. There's no way to know, but I will tell you this. The animals that are cloned, the cloned progeny lives much shorter period of time than the parents and is much less resistant to disease. So what do you think that's going to do to you if you ingest those animals that have been cloned? In addition, they will not be labeled. What is going on? What is going on, folks? We need to look around and create change. But rather than the daunting task of trying to change the multilateral, multinational system, which I do think needs to be done, where you can start is by changing what you do on a daily basis. Take these things in your own hands by creating change in your life, in yourself, yourselves, and your family. And that's, you know, that's where we start. So Dr. Zamperone and I, right here on The Natural Nurse and Dr. Z, we have put together, of course, The Natural Medicine Chest. That's a book that we have available for you at our site, naturalnurse.com, under books. But we also have produced little mini pieces on various topics in natural medicine. And we'd like to play them for you right here on The Natural Nurse and Dr. Z. And the one that we're going to play for you today is called Time. We have plenty of time for that. That is T-H-Y-M-E, the marvelous herb called thyme that you can be planting in your gardens right now. And when we come back, we will be talking with integrative physician Dr. David Gentile. We'll be right back with more right here on The Natural Nurse and Dr. Z.
On this edition of The Natural Medicine Chest, we'll discuss the folklore, history, chemistry, and medicinal applications of the common kitchen herb, thyme.
The common culinary spice known botanically as Thymus vulgaris is only one member of a large genera which includes over 400 species and even more varieties. The Thymus genera is originally native to the Mediterranean region and is a perennial plant which grows wild in usually dry, sandy soil, green heaths, and grasslands. Thyme is a prolific, fragrant, creeping ground cover and often displays an attractive spray of flowering branchlets spanning the spectrum from white to violet.
There is considerable debate amongst historians as to the origin of the name thyme. Some believe it to be from the Greek thymen, meaning to fumigate or to burn a sacrifice, because it was used as a sweet-smelling incense and also to keep pests and venomous creatures away from the Greek home. Others believe it came from the Greek thumos, meaning courage or energy, perhaps because it has a reputation of being used by Greek warriors for courage and was bathed in and used as a beverage for invigoration. The Egyptians used an herb called thyme, which we believe is thymus vulgaris, to mummify their dead. The principal chemical constituents of thyme are the volatile oils consisting of phenol, thymol, and carvacrol. A 1977 article in the scientific journal Chemical Abstracts revealed that thymol's antimicrobial activity is 18 times more powerful than phenol. Phenol is a major antiseptic used in commercial germicidal cleaners like Lysol. Thymol is one of the most potent antimicrobial substances known and far surpasses even the strongest antibiotics. It has been illustrated in the Journal of Chemistry and in the Merck Index of Drugs and Chemicals to destroy parasites, worms, fungi, bacteria, mosquito larvae, and many viruses.
The pharmaceutical and cosmetic industry is privy to the important medicinal effects of oil of thymus vulgaris. It is ubiquitously found in gargles, cough drops, vapor rubs, and many mouthwashes. Oil of thyme is to be used, albeit very sparingly because of its potency, as a gargle or mouthwash for sore throats and inflamed gums. Because the volatile oil is expelled via the lungs and kidneys, naturopathic physicians use it for upper respiratory infections and urinary tract infections. If you're in the midst of a cold and are lying in bed with too much thyme on your hands, try making a thyme tea made with just a few teaspoons of thyme to a cup of boiling water. It's an excellent diaphoretic because it causes the body to perspire profusely. Thyme also possesses an excellent carminative and antispasmodic effect, helping in poor digestion, flatulence, and intestinal gripe.
So, listeners, if you're feeling ill, thyme heals all wounds. Remember to reach for that thyme in a bottle the next time you open up the natural medicine chest.
And thank you so much for joining us once again. This is Ellen Kamai, the Natural Nurse at naturalnurse.com and Facebook, The Natural Nurse. We'd love to hear from you. And today we have as our guest Dr. David Gentile. Dr. Gentile is a board-certified integrative medicine physician, synthesizing a comprehensive approach that combines osteopathic, musculoskeletal medicine, medical acupuncture, pain management, age management, weight management, nutrition, and brain wellness. Dr. Gentile empowers his patients with his approach to lifestyle medicine. He has acted as the Associate Director of Medical Education at North Shore LIJ at Plainview Hospital and has instructed courses at Stony Brook University Hospital and Touro College and was involved in published research at Stony Brook University Hospital. Dr. Gentile is a police surgeon and is actively treating 9/11 first responders. As a master chef, Dr. Gentile deeply understands the connection between healthy eating and wellness. He leads workshops on culinary-based nutritional cooking shows titled The Good Life with Dr. Dave and also teaches Power Chi, a fusion of Tai Chi and Qi Gong. Very eclectic, wonderful person. We're so happy to have on board with us today as our guest, Dr. David Gentile.
Thank you, Ellen. Great to be with you today.
Yes, thanks for joining us. Now, you know, just the other day I came over and saw your wonderful facility. And just walking in there gives someone a feeling of being taken care of and healed.
Oh, thank you, Ellen. We really worked hard when we bought this building to make it a haven for healing and wellness. And actually, I'm thinking of renaming my practice Oasis Integrative Medicine.
That's a beautiful name, and it has that feeling tone, I'll tell you that, as we walked in. And I do want to tell our listeners that you're right on Long Island, so for some listeners, you are local, and they can find out more at www.drdavesweb.com. Now, Dr. Dave, your background is highly trained conventional medicine.
That's correct.
So what led you to this interest in much more of a holistic approach?
Well, I've always been interested in wellness, and it really started with finding my own path to wellness even before becoming a physician. And then once I chose my pathway for education, my goal was to really get a very, very firm fix on the Western medical model so that when I went into the integrative realm, I would be able to help patients and really have the science behind treating down pat, and that's how I really went about the whole thing. Integrative medicine was really a combination of a lot of study that went over and beyond my traditional residency training and medical school, etc.
Yes, and you are board certified in so many areas.
Yes.
And continuing to
try to even go further with that. You know, I think the more I get a chance to study and find truths in different things, I go for new board certifications in those areas.
Now, you have a wide range of patients who come to your clinic.
Yes.
What would you say they span in terms of perhaps groups or even individuals without mentioning names, of course?
Well, I get a lot of patients that get referred by other physicians, practitioners, or other patients that are typically the chronic pain patients that haven't gotten any resolve, chronic fatigue patients that are still troubled, fibromyalgic patients. I get patients that are looking to lose weight, find vitality, and really just have a more productive lifestyle and either get off of meds or just find true health within themselves.
Well, that's a big one I have found, get off of meds, because so many people are told if they're put on a medication, let's say high blood pressure medication or high cholesterol medication, that they're going to have to take these the rest of their life. And what they find is that although it might help in terms of the number measurement, it does not make them feel better.
True, true. In many cases, absolutely, absolutely.
They have to make the change before you could help them get off it, of course.
Oh, without a doubt. And, you know, I certainly use pharmaceuticals in my practice, too, as bridges till we find what works in the integrative medicine world so that we can get them off of that. And, you know, with medicine, pharmaceuticals, there's so many side effects, and I don't want to have a patient suffering from the side effects of certain medications. I mean, I like to bridge, again, the Western model with the integrative model, and it really seems to work best for patients to know that if we need to bridge them with a pharmaceutical, it's available. We'll use it just for a short period of time till we reach our goals. And then the natural approaches we're taking over with them on really dig in and make hold of their changes. And they find that really to really work well because they get empowered as they're starting to see changes in their own health and vitality.
Well, something very specific. Let's look at someone came in with, we'll talk about chronic fatigue because, mm-hmm. you know, to this day, and I've been doing natural medicine since 1964, many, many years,
mm-hmm.
and chronic fatigue was even around then. But to this day, it does not seem to be recognized. Like there's no specific code for that, is there?
Actually, no, there is. Chronic fatigue is a billable ICD. But I lump it together with, you know, typically a lot of chronic fatigue patients will have fibromyalgia or myositis, other changes too. So, you know, it's part of a whole constellation of symptoms. I mean, especially chronic fatigue, you can't just say chronic fatigue because there's so many factors that go with it, you know. So if I do have a patient with chronic fatigue, I look at all the comorbidities that go with that and try to get those under control, which then helps the more global diagnosis of chronic fatigue syndrome.
It does, but it's such a shame because most often people, if they're seeing only a conventional physician, they'll sort of usually just get antidepressants and antibiotics for no particular reason and actually feel worse in the long run. And then, of course, they really do get depressed. They are depressed because they can't function.
Right, right. And all of these things, whether it's chronic fatigue, fibromyalgia, or just even chronic pain in of itself, there's a lot of disorders of the neurotransmitters, the serotonin, the norepinephrine, the dopamine. So all of those key neurotransmitters have to be addressed, and that's part of the beauty of working with these patients is trying to figure out what combination is going to work best for them in the approach of getting rid of these conditions.
Now, I know you are also an acupuncturist.
Yes.
So what led you to study acupuncture, and how well does acupuncture work as part of the treatment protocols that you use?
Well, how I got interested in it actually was when I was a medical student. I worked with a physician who was at the time doing a lot more integrative medicine than most doctors locally on Long Island at the time, and he was certified in acupuncture. And I got a treatment. I was under a lot of stress in medical school, and I needed some resolve, too. And when I got that first treatment, I said, wow, this is really something to explore further. And once I graduated from, I guess it was my internship, I started my training in tandem with doing other things for acupuncture, and it really has been a great modality to use in conjunction with everything else I do. It just helps with so many things, whether it be pain, whether it's acute or chronic. It's great for depression, anxiety. It's a great one for fibromyalgia, gastric disorders, GERD or irritable bowel. So I get a lot of benefits from that. So it's part of an army of different things I use to help the patients. And I always like to have patients walk out in that calm bliss after acupuncture and see how well they did with the treatment. It's nice.
Well, you're talking about gastrointestinal problems. Of course, that is so paramount in our country that I believe antacids are one of the highest selling over-the-counter drugs.
It's amazing. I think probably over-the-counter, you're right. I think that's probably one of the number ones. And antidepressants are, I think, number one in the prescription world. So we're just talking about these two items today, and it is fascinating how many people quickly turn for these things.
And you are an expert in what we could call nutritional cooking.
Yes, I am.
What is nutritional cooking? It's almost like in physicians in particular, even if somebody comes in with a GI complaint, they don't even seem to discuss what they're eating.
Yes. Well, what we eat certainly affects us biochemically. It affects us in so many different ways, and I was a chef by training previously, and I've been in the restaurant business, and I've always had a passion for food and still do. And part of my approach when I went into medicine was to try to bring that in, so not to just make it that I do nutrition with a patient, but I take it to the level of actually making them feel empowered on how to shop, prepare, cook to meet their medical and nutritional needs. And it's really great because I have a lot of fun with this because it's a passion of mine, and I know the huge role food has in wellness. So I've always put that together with my whole mission. It's really been fun.
Well, what would be a typical diet, or would it be completely different for each and every person?
It really is different for each and every person in the sense that if they're coming in with a specific disorder that we need to address different things, I will put them on different diets. But in general, for almost all of my patients, I look to try to get them on eating three meals with three snacks per day. I particularly like the rule of thirds, which is something I put out on my website, which is one-third low-glycemic carbohydrates, one-third lean, clean proteins, and one-third healthy fats. And for most people, that works pretty well. Then there's subsets of patients where I'll put them on a gluten-free diet or a nightshade-free diet, or we'll find culprits in their diet or lifestyle choices that we remove, and they see the benefit, and then they'll stick with that.
Well, let's talk about healthy fats, because that might be an oxymoron concept for some listeners.
Well, I mean, with my Italian heritage, it was very easy for me to embrace the science and the data between wellness and the use of olive oil, for example. In cooking, you know, extra virgin, cold press, organic olive oil is like an elixir. It's just the benefits just go on and on from all the studies that I've seen out there. So I pretty much have patients limit their fats when they're using a liquid oil to olive oil, occasionally canola. And then the fats that you can find in avocado and nuts, things like that, in fish. Of course, we have to be careful, too, with the consumption of fish because of the heavy metal toxicities. So I will always adjunctively have patients take high-dose omega-3 fatty oils, because I've seen so many benefits with that, from everything from inflammation to the integrity and beauty of their skin to just even it helps in depression. It's just a good overall, I call it my desert island supplement. I like that. You know, if I had one supplement to choose, fish oil is one that I really like to see patients on.
Another fat that I think has a very exciting profile is organic, unrefined coconut oil.
Yes, yes, yes. I've actually started using that in my own diet. I've also started using that with patients. I'm kind of my own test kitchen or lab. So if I can work with it, then I can endorse it, and I do. I love it. I love it. I was even using medium-chain triglycerides for a while in my workout shake in the morning, and I really loved using that, and it was a coconut-based derivative.
Yeah, I find that's a really good one. And like you said, the results can be felt pretty quickly,
yes.
Like in terms of skin smoothness and things like that. So it's
actually
worth
I mean,
a try.
Coconut, the unrefined coconut oil, too, it's great. You just put a little bit of that on your hands at night before you go to bed almost... as a skin rejuvenator. It's great.
Yeah, I have found that to be the case. And, you know, so simple, because when you read the ingredients on the label, there's one word, you
yes.
know, coconut oil. As long as it is unrefined organic, because otherwise once it's refined, it's a whole different ballgame.
Plus you feel like you're on vacation with the smell of coconut going to bed, right?
You know, that's true. When you open that jar, it smells like you actually spent a lot of money on a ticket to an exotic island. So that's another benefit.
I love it. I love it. I truly think that. Every time I open the jar and do that, I think the same thing.
Now, Dr. Gentile, one thing that you know quite a bit about and that you use therapeutically that might be new to some of our listeners is called glutathione.
Yes.
So why don't we talk about, like, what it is, first
okay.
of all.
Well, glutathione is an amazing master antioxidant of the body, and it's a tripeptide of three different things, which is L-glutamine, L-cysteine, and glycine. And our liver produces it, and I've seen so many wonderful benefits with it, because as an antioxidant, it really is probably one of the most powerful ones I've seen recently, and one that I use in conjunction with others. Because of its nature to squelch free radicals, oxidative markers in the body, it's really profound, the things I see taking place. It rejuvenates mitochondria. It's got roles for detoxification, heavy metal chelation. It's got great properties for age management. And it's great in those patients with the chronic fatigue, the fibromyalgia, the fatigue, depression. I've seen so many wonderful benefits of using it.
Well, let's go a little bit more deeply into glutathione. Like, what is it, and where would it be found naturally in the body?
Well, it's found in the blood, and it crosses the blood-brain barrier. It crosses the cellular matrix. There's two different forms. There's the reduced form, which is the one we want, which is the one that squelches the free radicals. And then there's the oxidized form. And typically in a very healthy human, it's like a 9-to-1 ratio, 9 parts reduced to 1 part oxidized. But as we go through life with the stressors, physical stressors, mental stressors, environmental stressors, the oxidized form seems to creep upwards. And I also have seen that right now we have so many environmental toxins that are hitting us all at once that just letting our bodies generate its baseline, or what we call basal rate, is not enough. Especially once a person goes into a dysfunction or an imbalance, that's when I use it therapeutically via IV.
So is there a way to measure how much glutathione one has in the system to begin with?
I go, you know, here's one of the things in my practice. I don't do a lot of extraneous, extra tests and things like that. I look at some oxidative markers, but I really drive a lot based on symptomatology of patients, because at this point, when the people come in and I put them through their general lab testing, whatever other testing we need to do, once they fall into certain categories, I'll know based on a track record what types of things work best. And for me, I've always found with patients, lab work doesn't always give me the results I'm looking for. And it's very expensive sometimes to send patients for all this lab work. So I'll say, let's start therapy. Let's put your money into therapy as opposed to testing. And as they start seeing their markers improve, which is really lifestyle markers, decrease fatigue, decrease pain, more vitality, to me that's much more effective than looking at some lab values.
So in terms of glutathione, how is that usually administered?
Well, in my office, we do it IV. I do a 1,000 milligram push, and it's really it's a quick, effective treatment. It's about 5 minutes. It's not a long IV drip or anything like that. It's a very small butterfly needle, and I put it in on a large syringe, put it in somebody's vein, and it's a slow therapy that really, boom, as soon as you have it, you feel the difference. As a matter of fact, today I did my Monday morning glutathione drip on myself, and I really just got awake and alive probably about within a half hour to an hour later.
Well, what are some of the activities of glutathione in the body? You know, like when we look at these complex charts, let's say, on metabolism, is there a part of the cell it normally would be found in, and what would be its usual jobs in our system?
Well, the biggest thing is to reduce oxidation in the body and to prevent harm to the cell. Specifically, the one part of the cell that gets affected the most is the mitochondria. It's very, very susceptible to low glutathione levels.
Well, so, let's stop right there, because I know that you know that I know what a mitochondria is, but let's define that a little bit for some listeners who may not be as familiar with it.
Okay, sure. The mitochondria is the cellular powerhouse. It's where the cell takes in the nutrients that it typically will get, and it'll create what we call ATP. ATP is the unit of energy that we thrive on. That makes our cells go. And when the mitochondria become damaged, we'll get fatigue and just a general spiral downwards to not feeling well. And I love the word vitality. To me, health is vitality. When you're feeling vital, you have health. And when your mitochondria aren't working well, you can't feel vital.
So it's basically the powerhouse or the battery aspect of the cell.
Yes, correct.
And so when people feel run down, then one of the limiting factors may be the fact that they're not having enough glutathione.
Correct. Or in their body, the ratio between the reduced and the oxidized form has shifted, where they have too much oxidized form and not enough of what we call the reduced form.
Well, can glutathione be taken as an oral supplement?
You know, that's a great question. And I do supplement some patients with what would be considered the precursors for glutathione, so in between visits to keep a higher level of glutathione in the body. I use things such as the like turmeric, green tea extract, the cruciferous vegetable blends like broccoli and cabbage, things like that. Those help bring it up. Whey protein is excellent. Glutamine, not to be confused with glutathione, but glutamine can be taken in as well. And vitamin C seems to help as well. And again, there are some oral forms that I haven't played with as much, because when patients are coming to me, typically they're already in dysfunction. So I want to bring them back as safely and quickly as I can. So I'll do that initially with the IV therapy, then introduce oral precursors to it. And I haven't played with some of the new oral forms that are supposed to be pretty good. There's a light liposomal glutathione that may work very well, and I just haven't used that in my patient population base because of the fact that I have gotten such great results with the IV therapy.
Right, which is something that they may not be able to get anywhere, but people can get at your practice. And we're just going to take a little short break here for a station identification for Progressive Radio Network so they can tell you about the many great shows that are available here for anyone to listen to anytime, because Progressive Radio Network is available at prn.fm 24/7. To hear this show again, you can just go to Natural Nurse, and you'll see it posted shortly after we're done today, along with many other wonderful shows on Progressive Radio Network. This is Ellen Kamai, the Natural Nurse, and we'll be right back with more right after the Progressive Radio Network comments. Welcome back to more right here on The Natural Nurse and Dr. Z, and we'd love to hear from you. We get so many comments and emails at naturalnurse.com. You can click under schedules and see all the lectures that we're giving. Summertime is here, so we are really busy outside. We'll be at the New York Botanical Gardens on May 27th. We'll be in Old Westbury on June 3rd. We'll be at Old Bethpage Restoration Village in Bethpage on July 2nd. And we'll be at Post University doing a labyrinth walk and edible and medicinal herb class on June 27th. So you can get more information about all of those by going to naturalnurse.com under schedules. And today we have as our guest Dr. David Gentile, D-O-C-A-C-P-C, acupuncturist, board-certified integrative medical physician, who synthesizes a comprehensive approach that combines the best of both Western medicine and integrative medicine. You can find out more at drdavesweb.com. And Dr. Dave, tell us about your office, where it is, and also if you're going to have any other offices available.
Oh, okay, great question. Thanks again, Ellen. My office is out in Rocky Point, 797 Route 25A in Rocky Point. Number here, if anybody wants to reach us, is 631-821-4200. Right now, this is my solo practice. I did have another office previously in Nassau County, and I'm currently looking to embrace maybe getting another office again in Nassau County, but right now, really have focused our efforts out at our facility out here.
And it's also a beautiful area.
Thank you.
Rocky Point's a beautiful area. I love the way there's a beach that drops right down to the ocean there, and it's like on a mountain. So it's a nice ride. It's a great area for people in Suffolk County, very, very easy for them to get to. And I bet people come out from the city, too, because you do so many unusual therapies.
Yeah, we have patients that come all the way out from the city, which is not a bad drive either. A lot of people come out from the East End. I really have patients coming from all over Long Island and Manhattan and actually even lower Westchester occasionally.
Well, give us one case study just off the top of your head, like somebody that just came in and sort of was very confused, didn't know what was going on in their life, and so many people have told me that it was just excellent coming to you and how much better they feel.
You want to throw out a specific diagnosis so I could tie a patient into it?
Sure. Let's just say somebody with, let's say, ongoing migraine headaches.
Okay. Ongoing migraine headache. So the migraine headaches pathology is very interesting because a classic migraine headache is vascular in nature, but there's a lot of cofactors that go into the migraine pathology or pathophysiology. So with migraineurs, I do a lot of osteopathic evaluation initially to see if there's any musculoskeletal findings that are blocking or impeding the flow of blood in and out of the cranium. So a lot of times they're what we call the occiput or atlantal joint will be restricted, so I might treat that osteopathically. I've gotten great results with different nutraceuticals for migraines that can be used in adjunction to the actual treatment itself. I'll use acupuncture. And in many patients, there will be some dietary changes that will take place that seem to reduce the triggering effects that will bring on a migraine or the inflammatory process that seem to exacerbate a migraine. And migraines are tough because they can be very, very debilitating. And I love the opportunity to treat somebody with a migraine and help them because I really know how some people really lose. Some people can lose days out of their week where they can't work, can't function, and it's really nice to bring them back to the point where they're feeling vital and are not losing out on their quality of life or affecting their job or career.
And boy, you are so right. Not only are migraines debilitating, they're very difficult to treat. It seems like conventional medicine does not have any really pat answers for it, and neither does natural medicine. It's a combination, and it's sort of ongoing to find the triggers, and then, like you said, using a multimodality approach. And what we can usually get is less severity and lower rate of occurrence, if not completely rid of them.
Right. And for any condition I treat, some of the factors that I look at would be the intensity. Have I helped with the intensity, brought it down, the frequency, or the duration? So, like, those are three prongs that I use as evaluation each visit to say, how are we progressing? And again, it's a tough one to treat. But what I always tell my patients when they come in is, I'm glad you're here. You may have suffered for a long time with this, but I'm not going to give up on you until we find the right combination. So, I don't. And we usually find something that's going to work out in a period of time. And sometimes it's going back and forth and saying, okay, this brought down the frequency, but didn't change the intensity. This may bring down the intensity, but it didn't change the frequency. So eventually you get the right recipe, for no better words, to use than that. You know, treatment is a recipe. What works to come out with the best outcome?
Oh, and so wonderfully put by a true chef, that's for sure. Now, when you give somebody an eating protocol, do they actually go home and try, you know, these changes? Do you make it something they can address in their everyday life?
Yes. One of the things that I do, which I found very important over the years, is I never give somebody a lifestyle change such as eating before first I've had them really reflect and look at what they're doing already. So regardless of why they might be taking a change in their eating program, I'll have them do what I call a food mood log for 1 week. Now, that works great for weight loss, but even let's just say a migrainer. Maybe by doing the food mood log, they notice, you know what, every time I eat this, I get the prodrome of a migraine. So in many cases, it becomes a little bit of a scientific research that they're doing on their own. So when they bring that in to me, we look at that and I'll see, well, you know, I did this, but I started getting that little fuzzy feeling, but I didn't get a true migraine. But when I ate this, this, and this, boom, I had a migraine. So in some cases, it's actually even diagnostic. But I like patients to see, what have you been doing? Then once we make the changes, they can appreciate how far they've come.
Yeah, that's wonderful because you're increasing self-awareness and the fact that you actually, you, meaning each of us, is the progenitor of our own health and wellness in so many ways. And then someone like yourself can act as a diagnostician and as a teacher and support in all the many therapeutic modalities that you do. That's so much better than just writing a prescription for a pharmaceutical, which, like you said, you will do if you think that's necessary and as a bridge, not as, you know, for the life of the patient if it's not totally required.
That's so true. I mean, my role as a physician, or I think for any physician, is to empower patients or be a conduit of healing. Ultimately, the body has what it needs with the right input to take those things and find health again. You know, the body is very smart. There's a lot of wisdom to the body. No physician could ever take over the intrinsic wisdom of the body. All we do is, like you said, we do the diagnostic work, we do the therapeutic interventions, and then the body does what it needs to do.
That's a really, really well-balanced approach. Now, how does Tai Chi and Qi Gong come into the picture?
Well, Tai Chi and Qigong are phenomenal. I really love the combination. Tai Chi is great for balance and immune function and joint health and relaxation. It's a moving meditation. And Qigong is an art form that literally enhances or brings up your Qi through different movements. And embracing the philosophy of acupuncture, I found adding these things to patients' protocols and regimens really helps. I do it myself every day, and I find that if I do miss a day or cut my session short, I feel a difference.
Now, how do you give that to patients? Do you take home a video, or how would they do that? Do you show them certain moves to do?
Well, I do. I show certain patients certain moves if they're open, ready, and I think that's an important thing. I used to teach classes in the hospital setting for different organizations. I've done that quite a bit, and that's one of the projects I'm working on, is to hopefully get a video together, because I've shown patients it, and sometimes, you know, you can't really draw a stick figure of how to do the move, but my job is video done.
Yeah, that is a good idea, because then they can actually take that home with them. And, of course, you can also post them on YouTube and all those kind of things.
Absolutely. That would be fun.
As we get further along in the technological aspects. So I want to thank you so much for being our guest today on The Natural Nurse and Dr. Z. Dr. Dave, you talked about a lot of things, everything from low-tech stuff, but equally important in terms of food being our medicine, as well as exercise techniques and using something sophisticated like glutathione intravenously. Do you use any other IV therapies?
Yes. One of the other things I love to use is a Myers cocktail, which is great, again, for those chronic pain patients, the chronically depleted patients, the fibromyalgics, things like that. They really seem to do well. Then I do a lot of different IM or intramuscular injections. I do different B cocktails. I do a great combination that helps with weight loss, which is methionine, inositol, and choline. That helps mobilize the fat out of cells. And right now I'm actually working on a formulation for smoke cessation, which is an injectable. So I'm excited about getting all the research done on that.
That does sound exciting, and I want to thank you so much for being our guest today. Fascinating information. People can find out more by calling 631-821-4200 or Dr. Dave's web, that's Dr. Dave's, D-A-V-E-S, web, web.com. And if you tune in to The Natural Nurse and Dr. Z and go to archives, you'll be able to find contact information to Dr. David Gentile. Again, thank you so much for being our guest today. And listeners, thank you so much for joining us. We love to hear from you, naturalnurse.com or Facebook, The Natural Nurse. Until next time, this is Ellen Kamai, The Natural Nurse, hoping that you stay healthy.